just because I love shows about big, messy, dysfunctional families.
Shakespeare once said all the world's a stage, but he didn't tell us how to get there. This is Steps to the Stage, a 7th Street Theater podcast. I'm your host, Colin Pinedo, and let's get the show going.
Thank you, places!
Folks at home, do you have a business, small or otherwise, that isn't pulling in traffic the way you want it to? Well, it might be because they don't have something to remember you by. And that's why today, we are sponsored by Graphic Details, Inc., Signs and Displays. They will print out your banners, they'll cut vinyl, they'll do window graphics for the company cars. We're talking business cards, banner stands, LCD displays, tabletop displays, logos, all in full living color. Again, that is Graphic Details, Inc. here in Chino, California. Thank you so much.
Hello and welcome to Steps to the Stage, a 7th Street Community Theater podcast where I talk about the shows you love with the people you love. I am your host, Colin Pinedo, and if you want to go down one by one and introduce yourself, that would be lovely as well.
My name is Tiffany.
Hi, I'm Amanda.
I'm Chris.
I'm Tony.
And I'm Susie.
And we are here today talking about the new production of August Osage County that's happening at the Community Theater. When is that?
It opens September 8th, and it runs to the 30th, so it's basically, you know, the whole month of September.
Yeah,
four weekends. Very fun.
It's very exciting. How do you all feel about that? I'm seeing a lot of anxious but happy faces in front of me across the table. But
anxious and happy, I think, is good way to describe how we feel going into this week. We know we have a lot to do yet. We just had like a 4-hour-ish tech run through, you know, to go through all the lights and the sound and all that stuff. But I think we're in a good shape.
Yeah. So this is Tech Week? Yes.
This is.
All right. Very, very exciting. Very stressful. I know how that can be. If you want to say who you are in the show, what you do, what your roles are, that's also appreciated if you want to.
Well, I'm Tiffany. I'm playing Karen Weston. She's the youngest of the three sisters.
And I'm Amanda Nelson, and I'm playing Barbara, the eldest of the Weston sisters.
I'm Susie Pierce, and I play Ivy Weston, the middle sister.
And I'm Tony Lynch, and I play Violet, their mother.
And I'm Chris Steele, and I play the don't play, but I am the director of the show. I guess I could say television. I play the director as well.
As director, you play many different roles in this show.
Yes.
Wear many different hats. So what, Chris, what led you to this show as a director, as something, as a piece that you want to?
You know, for Chino Community Theater, we always pick our season. We have a play selection committee that comes in and picks the shows, and then we submit to direct those shows. And so when they had picked August Osage County, I knew that I really wanted to direct this one, just because I love shows about big, messy, dysfunctional families, and I really haven't directed many shows like that. But, you know, when you have just one setting and a bunch of great characters, and that for me is like the best kind of theater. I just love it. And this is, you know, the epitome of a big, messy, dysfunctional family. And so there's just so many great characters. And I knew that this area had some amazing actors, and I knew that we would be able to pull this off. You know, this is not an easy show to do. It's not done a whole lot. Many people might not even know the show at all unless they've seen the movie, because it just hasn't been done, at least that I know of, in this area for a while. It's a big undertaking, which is why I think a lot of theaters kind of stay away from it. But we really wanted to do something like this, something that was challenging and big, and you know, I think we're going to pull it off.
Yeah. Speaking as you said that it's not the most well-known show. I didn't know much about it until you started doing it here, and we started looking into it for this episode. So would you mind walking through
It's a Pulitzer Prize winner to start with, from 2007. It kind of captured, I think, at the time that the play came out, kind of the cultural zeitgeist of the time. And in fact, it still feels like it does, you know, almost over 15 years later. It still feels very relevant in so many ways, even though the world has changed a lot since then. There's so much that's, you know, the play sets up a lot of the things that are happening now in our country and a lot of the divisions and stuff like that, you can kind of see setting the stage in this particular play. Yeah, this is about an Oklahoma family that they're the patriarch, Beverly Weston, who's I don't know if he's a famous poet, but he got some attention years ago for a book of poetry that he had written. And that kind of set his reputation, and he became a teacher and also a major alcoholic. And so he goes missing at the very beginning of this play. And so there's like a mystery through this whole play of what happened to Beverly. And the whole family comes together. Violet, his wife, who's addicted to pills, her daughters basically come back for the first time in years. They're back together to kind of support her at this difficult time, and the whole family kind of comes together. And that's the setting for the show, is Beverly is missing, everybody comes together, and like a good mystery, we find out, you know, like on the last page, the fate of Beverly Weston and what exactly happened to him. So there's a really good mystery to the show, but it's also just a really wonderful character study and a look at families. And, you know, I think something everybody can relate to is everybody's part of a family of some kind, you know? So a lot of people will see people that they know for sure in this show.
Yes, yes, they will.
Yes. Whether they want to admit it or not.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what has drawn you to your characters? How do you see yourselves and your characters, and how do you relate and find familiarity in them for our other four?
Well, I play Ivy. I'm the one that's actually stayed closest to home. I've seen my mom and dad pretty often. I don't live very far away from them. I don't live with them, but I teach over at the university where my father taught. No, I don't teach. I'm the librarian. Sorry. But I'm the one that has really kind of been, I don't know, just, I wouldn't say like a caretaker, but more of a, you know, I've been the one kid that stayed. And so when the other sisters come in, there's definitely, I don't know if I, maybe some resentment in there, but there's definitely there's a division that has been set because they left and I didn't. So there's definitely a dynamic there between my mom and I that's different than the dynamic with the other sisters.
And Violet never lets them forget, you know, that they left. You know, she very much knows. Yeah. Has this, you know, family obligation is a big thing in this show, and especially with Violet. And Tony has a real good grasp on Violet, I think, in her character.
Yeah, it's really, she is a victim. She's never done anything wrong. Everybody does it to her. And so her kids leaving, you know, was an insult. They should never have done it. You know, your place is with me. And, you know, in the same kind of relationship I had with my husband, I expect him to, you know, cater to me. And I have people in my life that have been like that. My parents and my granny, very much like this woman, and very proud, very stubborn, very, and you know, the show is a comedy. We always get away from that. It's a comic tragedy. So trying to find those lighthearted moments, and part of it is just the way she talks, just the way she thinks, you know, her vision of something. It's horrible, but it's funny. It's funny. So it works out okay. I'm hoping to play that up well enough that we do get plenty of laughs in addition to the angst you know, that's there. Yeah.
Well, and Tracy Letts' script, and one of the reasons it's a Pulitzer Prize winner is because he does have that great balance of, you know, the darkness of this family. There's all sorts of issues that they're dealing with. Almost, you know, every issue you can think of we're dealing with in this family. But what's wonderful about Tracy Letts is that he has such a great sense of humor. So even when you don't think you should be laughing in a particular scene, you're going to find yourself laughing just because the dialogue is so smart and so funny. And
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. Okay, because I kept seeing comedy, and then I read the plot synopsis and like,
How on earth?
I'm like, wow. But okay, I'm glad to see that. Yeah,
You have to find the laughs in the darkness, you know?
Absolutely.
Especially in this day and age.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I think something Chris said that's so important is it's so incredibly smart. And I think each of these characters, too, are so very smart. Mm-hmm. And there's so much more to them than just this tragic, broken bunch, which absolutely they are. They're steeped in their own humanity, but there's so much to them. I mean, this is a family of intellectuals, you know, writer, father, professors in the family, librarians. These are people that, you know, they have so much to offer, but they've been held down and held back, I think, by a lot of these familial patterns and a lot of generational trauma and addiction and, you know, mental health. And especially this is an area of the country, I think, and the kind of family that doesn't talk about those things. And so you carry all of this around with no life raft, no one to help you. And especially for the sisters, I feel like they've just spent their lives trying their best to just float, to stay afloat in the midst of all of this. And, you know, as Susie mentioned with the caretaking aspect, it was never voluntary. It was always just something they have to do because of their parents' issues. You know, Violet and Bev being so weighed down in their own addictions, and that's really their number one priority is getting what they need to feed those. And their kids have been left to fend for each other and themselves, and for Barbara in particular, being the eldest, that care role was just all she ever knew, and she's survived in that. And leaving, I think, was in part because she started her own family and, you know, had new people to care for and was finally just done, exhausted, I think, by the weight of it all. So,
yeah, and I think with Karen, the youngest, she saw what was going on and she got out first. Like, there was no, she wasn't a favorite. She wasn't close with the sisters. And so I think the easiest thing was to just get out of Dodge, basically. Because when she comes back, she's deluded herself to think that everything's just going to be fine. We're here for a sad thing, but I get to reconnect and it's going to be a good time and everything's going to be all right. She walks into a situation wearing rose-colored glasses. Mm-hmm. When she knows they're going to be ripped right off of her. Like, there's no space for happiness. And so I think Karen in particular comes in with this idea that if I'm happy, everyone else will have to be happy around me. And that just is not the way this family works.
Yeah.
And you see Karen also, she comes in and you can tell she's not there to grieve with her sisters. She's there to connect with them. Mm-hmm. She's there to, like, she sees this as a bonding experience, you know, and she's really the only one that does. Yeah. But there's so many just interesting family dynamics with this show, and everybody just, you know, knocks it out of the park. I mean, people are going to come to this show and be shocked at the end when they find out that these people aren't all related in real life because they're so good at just being sisters and being daughters. And it's really quite amazing. The power of acting.
Thank you, Chris.
They're already cast, so I don't have to butter them up, you know?
And I always try to find, and this is something I've talked about before, the north and south of a character. And so having to do that with these type characters is really extraordinarily important because, you know, she does need some sympathy somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, why is she the way she is? And why does she expect this from her daughters? And they still want validation. They still want approval, you know, and I think most people can relate to that. We want our parents to love us, accept us, you know, and that's just a thing that happens all the time. So not too good here, though.
Well, and I think that's part of it, too, is that what's important about a piece like this and this kind of art in general is each audience member is going to have their own unique experience.
Right.
They're going to see, like Chris said, people they know and different people. They're going to identify, sympathize, empathize with different people, different parts, different moments. And I truly believe that no two people are going to see this thing exactly the same way, because each character, the humanity in each of them is very real, but so is the opposite. And it's that polarizing kind of thing. And I'm excited for people to get to dig in and really let it kind of wash over them and see where it takes them.
If you need insurance, Vince will work for you. Vince Polito is a local farmer's insurance agent who wants to help you out. Auto, home, renters, and more, open 8 to 5 on all weekdays. Over 35 years experience and licensed in 4 states. Call now.
And as actors, we get to do that.
We've discussed, like even Chris and I today, I kind of told him, hey, I think this about Ivy, you know, and he goes, yeah, well, that's character stuff that the audience is never going to know that that's actually what happened, but that creates that absolute authenticity as, you know, creating an actual person versus just saying these things. And, you know, but you're, and they kind of come from me. It doesn't come right away. I wouldn't say I'm one of those people that walks in going, hey, I know exactly. I'm pretty sure about this Ivy, especially because I don't play characters like this that often. She's a little more, she stands back. She's definitely not like Barbara, where, you know, she comes in kind of, you know, like she's going to charge in and stuff. No, she's pretty well wrapped around her mom's finger, even though she really is trying to create these boundaries. But I don't think that Ivy is ever really
long suffering is a title I would give to her.
Yes, long suffering, and she's one of those people that I think the audience is going to be like, why doesn't she just effing leave? Why doesn't she go? And then that's something that I think that a lot of people are going to relate to is, you know, you hear this a lot where you know that there's a person in an abusive relationship of some kind, and they're like, well, why do they go back? Or why do they stay? Or why don't they just do that? And that's the thing. It is so much more complicated. And so with my character, with my studying, I've tried to diagnose my mother with some kind of something, so then I can start to figure out, well, why Ivy reacts the way she does to that, because I've decided for myself what is wrong with Violet. And that's what has – this is the effect that it is created in this person that she created. Thanks, Mom. Thank you very much.
Wow. These are fabulous actors. I'm serious. It's just such an honor, because you can go – sky high with it, with your emotions and anger and rage and everything, and meet me right at the same spot. Boy, it's wonderful. It's awesome. They all are just so totally believable that it's just incredible. It really is.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So Barbara and what's your character's name? Sorry.
Violet.
They're sort of the main sort of.
Yes.
Yeah. The main, the two sort of most in.
Yeah,
with each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Would you mind sort of speaking on that and sort of how that?
Barbara is my favorite. She is, and I am crushed that she left. She moved away with her family and didn't stay with me. And I have never forgiven her for that. And it's very important to me that she comes back and pays homage to me. You know, she owes that to me. I mean, that's how, you know, Violet thinks you really should never have left, and you know, things happened here because you left. You did it. We fell apart because you left. So I'm putting all the blame on her, which is definitely what Violet likes to do, is to pass on the blame. And yet I'm proud of Barbara because she's strong, and I like all the things that she does, and I think she's a lot like me. Unfortunately, that's true. But I mean, that's part of it. That's the dynamic that's there. And I want her to love me, and I want her to be subservient to me, you know. So you want to speak to that now?
Yeah, I think the thing about Barbara for me that's the most saturated is she's kind of a study in coping mechanisms in children who are raised. I've always characterized Violet this way. She's toxic and chaotic. You know, she's a clinical narcissist, and she really, truly cares about nobody but herself. And she has three daughters who she loves. She's a parent. She loves them. You know, you feed and clothe your kids as their babies because you have to, so they survive. But then I think there was a point in their lives where she's like, all right, you're on your own, and stopped thinking of them in this parental, maternal way, and was like, well, now you're just my little buddies who live here. Mm-hmm. You're my roommates. You're just other women in my life. And so there was, when you have kids still in adolescence longing for that guidance and that parental connection, and you're treated like peers, and especially Barbara being the oldest, having two sisters to probably watch out for and, mm-hmm. you know, take care of, she's just kind of developed this thick skin, a very sharp tongue, mm-hmm. a very sort of, you know, self-deprecating kind of response to this traumatic circumstance she's grown up in. And, you know, I think it's telling that she met and married a guy from the same area, but once they had a kid, it was like, okay, it's time. I've got my own family to think about now. I've got my own, you know, life to build. And she finally felt permission, so to speak, that to go and do that for herself. And she's like, I got to, I have to, because if I don't, I might not ever get another chance. And she took off, and, you know, thankfully they had a reason to go, and coming back for her, it's that deep rooted obligation in this kind of family. She's the eldest. There's a crisis. I have to show up. So here I come. I might not be ready, but mm-hmm. it's going to be what it's going to be. And I think from the minute she walks in the door, it's like, all right, here we go. She, mm-hmm. I think she already knows what to expect to some degree. Mm-hmm. And she's just trying to get through each moment. And the thing that's really interesting too about all of this is each of the girls have their own lives, and they bring a lot of that own life with them. They've got their own issues now. They're adults. They have their own, and you'll learn a lot more about each of their separate lives as well, and just what they're doing. And her mother is this force of nature, personality-wise, and she, I think, has just done her best to not only cope with it, but to compete with it, mm-hmm. and to find a way to not be absolutely bulldozed by mm-hmm. this,
you know,
tidal wave.
I think all the sisters were emotional hostages mm-hmm. to Violet, yeah. and you two with your escape with returning, it turns out that you're still an emotional hostage. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I've been here this whole time, Ivy's been here this whole time. And so, of course, you'd expect that from Ivy, but, you know, you think, oh, well, they've created some kind of a, you know, more clear boundaries and things like that, but they come back, and that is not the case.
You also have this just classic generational clash, mm-hmm. you know, with mm-hmm. Violet, who grew up in a very different time when you really didn't get divorced. She stayed with her husband, and they stayed in a miserable marriage together. And they used drugs to cope. And I think there's some resentment there too. Barbara and Bill, her husband, they're getting a divorce. They're not staying together like Violet and Beverly did. And I think there's some aspect of where Violet is looking at Barbara, and this happens, I think, throughout the whole show, looking at her with admiration for doing things that she couldn't do, but also resenting her at the same time for doing the same exact thing.
Yeah, there's always this element of they keep, I think, ping-ponging back and forth between their current new dynamics and those deep-seated, you know, ties of their childhood, and how they were talked to and treated and related to each other as kids. Chris and I were talking about it. There are certain family members' houses or friends' houses, and you pull up in the driveway and you know the vibe, or so mm-hmm. to speak, is going to be one thing. Mm-hmm. And I think each of them hits that front porch and they go, oh, I know exactly what's coming. Mm-hmm. It's going to only be one way once I go in there. Mm-hmm. There's no other way. And that, oof, you know, it's heavy. It's a lot mm-hmm. to carry, and mm-hmm. they're powerless to it.
Well, and Karen's the only sister that doesn't have a one-on-one moment with their mom. Yeah. She actually doesn't even encounter their mom until the entire family and the entire cast is there. Mm-hmm. And so there's no, there's an isolation from her. So you meet Karen as this very different person. And then when mom shows up, it's like Amanda was saying, it's kind of that jolt. You go back to where you were and when you were in those moments of that age or wherever that time was that you get locked in. And I think that's what happens with Karen in particular. Once mom shows up, is she is, I would guess, 13 from the moment mom speaks to her. She goes from holding herself and trying to prove that she's a grown-up and she's this grown woman and she has this life and she's been through these things. She's learned all of these lessons. Mom shows up. She is 13. It is head down, just completely reverting back to who she was.
And we're all in our 40s.
Yeah.
These children are, I mean, it's not like her daughters are 20. Like super young. Not that 40 is old, of course, but
you're adults.
Yeah. People really do are they're expected. I think in our society, by the time you're 40, you're kind of expected to have your, you know, what together. And because we're not allowed to cuss on this podcast.
As far as I'm aware.
Please don't.
Or as I've experimented with.
Dang it. All right.
We should tell your podcast listeners that we're allowed to cuss in the show for sure.
Oh, yes.
So
this is
not something you want to bring your kids to.
Gina community.
This is not G-rated by any means.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we throw around a few F-bombs on the stage. At least some of the characters do. Not everybody does.
It's pretty much all me.
It's Violet and Barbara. They're the potty mouths of this show for sure.
They are, for sure.
But, you know, there's other family members, too, that we should mention, too. We have Maddie Faye and Charlie, who are Maddie Faye is Violet's sister. And there's a whole backstory with that, too. With Maddie Faye and her husband, with their child, little Charles. And there's definitely a connection with one of the daughters, with little Charles, that we find out later. And there's all sorts of like twists and turns actually throughout the whole show. Like I said, there is really a classic mystery kind of structure to this where you find out there's revelations about people. And so, you know, even though you're getting this big family character study, you know, there's all sorts of stuff going on in this show. So, you know, it's a three-act long show, but it moves like so fast. Yeah. Like nobody's going to be bored by this, believe me.
No. And that's what's amazing is that you look and you're like, we just got through the whole show. That was great. And you look, you're like, oh my gosh, this is kind of a long show, but it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah. That's great. Are you guys doing the two intermissions or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Two intermissions, three acts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fun. Yeah.
But it moves like gangbusters.
Yeah.
Not two 15-minute intermissions. One shorter.
Okay. Yeah. I see.
Yeah. And there's so much to look at, so much to see, so much to keep up with. I guarantee you'll be talking. The audience will be talking to each other at each intermission about what they just saw.
For sure.
Yeah.
And good rise back home too.
Yeah.
Discussing the show. This is just kind of one of those shows that you're going to be thinking about this for like 2 weeks later.
All right.
A while.
Very exciting.
And if you haven't seen the movie, let me give my personal petition. Please do not watch the movie until you come see the show.
Okay.
The play came first, and it is, I think it's something really special to see it as the author originally intended it. I think he was pretty involved with the production of the film.
There are some things I will say that are just meant to be on stage.
Yeah,
and I think this is a play that's just meant to be seen on stage. No shade against the movie.
No.
I just feel like the movie is a movie. And I don't think this material is best suited for that, you know, kind
medium.
Of thing. I think this is a stage play. This is theater at its best. And, you know, you want to see this on stage for sure.
That sounds exciting to me.
Those are the things that make it attractive to audition for as an actor, there's a lot of meat to go around. And I know for me in particular with this show, there aren't a lot of shows that are being done on a regular, even semi-regular basis that are non-musicals that the leads are women. That you have to have not one, not two, you have to have at least 5 women who can come out and stand on a stage together and deliver the material together. And men get that opportunity a lot. I mean, we could name tons of them, and they're great shows. But doing a female version of The Odd Couple is not the same. It's not made for women, whereas this show was written for women to say the words that are going to make you uncomfortable. And as an actor, like that's like the cherry on the sundae to get to walk in and be like, ooh, I'm the one they're going to go home talking about. You know, that's typically not the response that you get to get.
Well, and to say, to piggyback on that, Tiffany, Amanda, and I, we all live pretty far from this theater. And if it weren't this script with this director, I would not be here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it makes a huge, huge difference. But I would, and I've missed a lot of family time, and I think it's absolutely worth it.
Well, and kudos to CCT for seeing the potential here. I mean, the undertaking, you guys, if nothing, just come to see the set. Is spectacular. It's a whole other character in the show. It's so phenomenal. Our production team is beyond talented. And, you know, I think something Tiff said that's so important is these big roles are written for women, but they are different kinds of women. They're so multifaceted, and there's so many layers, and it's so rich and complex, and it's this beautiful stained glass window of every emotion and layer and strength and weakness. And it's not, there's no archetypes going on in this at all, and I think that's what makes it so beautiful too.
You know what you've just done, though? We've really got to put on a great show based on what you just said. Yeah, we cannot screw this up now.
And I should also say we have some wonderful men in the show too. This is definitely the, you know, a female centered show. There's a lot of great guys in our cast as well, and they definitely add to the whole tapestry of this particular play. So I don't want people to think that. There's so many different kinds of characters in this play, and I love that.
Especially the men. I think what's beautiful about the male parts is the same thing, is they get to have just as much softness as they do hardness. They get those layers too. Like I said, there's nothing archetypal. You know, these men get to have these beautiful, deep, rich lives to themselves as well. And the guys are, I mean, these men are all just so lovely and warm and you know.
But building on what Tiffany said, they are characters who are reacting to the women and not the other way around, which is usually the case, where the women characters there are there just to react to the men, where this is all flipped for this show. And I love the fact that it's a male writer. It didn't take a woman to have to write this and these great female characters. Kudos to Tracy Letts.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's the beauty of the men in the cast too, is that they are so happy and supportive in that role reversal. Like, they were just as excited when you talk to the men and they're like, oh yeah, there are good roles for men in here. I knew I had to come down because I could do A, B, or C. You know, they had options as well. And that just is, it's just rare. I mean, while it made Chris's job a little bit more difficult in casting, it's always nice to have a refrigerator full of food as opposed to just a shelf full of food. And he got to have a whole refrigerator full of food to create something out of.
And there's a lot of food in this show.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of food in this show. Eat dinner before you come.
The focus of this show, or the central kind of centerpiece of the show, I should say, is this fantastic dinner scene. And I think we've all seen scenes like this in movies and stuff like that. I think the show Brothers and Sisters, if you remember that, it was like every episode had this crazy dinner scene where the whole family gets together. But this is one of those shows that has just like an amazing dinner scene. It's so fantastic. And Toni is just... She'll just blow you away.
She kills it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's about all the time that we have today. Thank you so much for speaking with me and sharing everything today. Thank you so much. All right.
Come see us.
Yes, August Osage County. When and how to get tickets? Or just when for now.
Yeah, the show is September 8th to the 30th, okay. And we have performances on Friday nights, Saturday nights, and Sunday nights, or Sunday afternoon. But we also have, we're having a talk back on our first Sunday. So if you want to meet the cast after the show and be able to ask questions, this is a perfect show for that. Mm-hmm. So we will have a talk back after this first Saturday or first Sunday matinee of the show. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me here. You were wonderful.
Thank you.
In today's day and age, it's more important than ever to remain informed and present in your community, which is why today we would like to highlight the Chino Champion local newspaper. Make sure you keep up with all of Chino's great local events like festivals, meetups, and live performances, virtual or otherwise. The Chino Champion. Thanks for tuning in. Please, subscribe to Steps to the Stage on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all that good stuff. And scene.